and if it's comfortable, close your eyes, place your hands in your heart, turn within. So grateful to pray, so grateful to center in that love and joy and mystical oneness that is always present. So grateful to know that this oneness lives, moves, and has its being as my life. And as I know this for myself, I know this for everyone here, I know this for every man, woman, and child on our planet. How grateful I am to know that love and joy and wisdom and truth and kindness and gratitude inform our very being. It is who we are. It is who we radiate. So I'm so grateful to call forth this joy, this love, to fill our sanctuary, to fill our hearts, to fill our children that we're welcoming back. We know that's already present in the animals that are outside and the joy that they bring us. So let us all open our hearts and our minds and our bodies to joy itself, to love, to freedom, to kindness, to light. How grateful I am for the beautiful unfolding of this service today, for Bonnie's message, for a beautiful singer, Shanti, for the animals, for the children getting to come back to church and to be together, for all of our youth leaders, for everyone who participates in making this service available for us here and on Facebook and YouTube. So grateful for joy embodying itself in us as us. So grateful for this opportunity to pray together, to be uplifted. And with a full heart, I release my words to the mystery, knowing it is done, it is perfect, it is complete, and together we say, and so it is.
Thank you. Thank you, Lita. And let's continue to take some nice deep breaths, breathing into that place, that beautiful place of grace and stillness that Lita led us to. As we empty ourselves, as we let go of the world, as we let go of worry, as we let go of thinking that we know how things should be, as we let go of trying to change others, as we let go of trying to change ourselves, but just relax into that place that is always with us, just as a wave is in the ocean. We are the wave in the ocean, looking for the ocean. We are the ocean in the wave, seeking to express itself. We are all of these things and so much more. We are I am. And so together, let us remember our true essence as we sing together, I am remembering who I am. And remember this for ourselves, but also on behalf of all beings everywhere, of all conditions, of everything expressing here in the cosmos as the I am, because there is nothing else but I am. Together we sing, I am remembering who I am.
I am remembering.
and in the divine sweetness of this moment, let us remember and bring that remembrance back into our open-eyed state as we deeply breathe in and then exhale, welcoming whatever is and being in love and in service to what is, as it is, and so it is. Namaste. Okay. I'm all confused. Usually there's a song right now. Shanti, what else you got? Okay. So the talk title today is An Alternative to Prayerfully Blaming Others. And I use that phrase loosely, and it's just in loving consideration of one of my friends, another minister. We used to go to ministerial conferences together all the time before COVID, and I love my colleagues so much, and I know I'm just like them. Sometimes when you get a lot of ministers in a room with a microphone with strong opinions, there's a bit of friction, let's put it that way. So my friend, after we would meet, would often tap me on the shoulder, and he would say, I think we need to go and prayerfully discuss others. And we did. I don't know how prayerful it was, but we did. And still love them at the same time, because, you know, there but for fortune go any one of us. This message is called, though, Prayerfully Blaming Others. And to be honest, right up front, blaming others, really, I haven't ever found an occasion in my life where it really serves me or the world, even if I'm doing it prayerfully. I'm not sure that there is such a thing as prayerfully blaming others. You know, if you're prayerfully blaming others, what you're doing is praying for blame, right? You know, my friend Hale Dwoskin used to say that guilt is an IOU for punishment. Blame is an IOU for shame and more blame. Because if you're blaming others, if I'm blaming others, it makes me vulnerable to others blaming myself. So if somebody says, you know, it's your fault that the goat pooped on the on the stage, I'll be like, yeah, you're right, it was my fault. Wow, I'm a bad person. I'm really ashamed of that, what that goat did. I could blame Chris. Yeah. But no. We're looking for an alternative to prayerfully blaming others. And the reason why is that this pandemic, which I've taken to calling the little stinker, right, this little stinker of a pandemic, has been going on for a long time. And have you noticed people have gotten a little cranky? Right? A little cranky. And I'm not even talking about social media. I'm not on social media that much these days, or that Nextdoor app where all the neighbors get together and complain. they prayerfully complain about their neighbors and other things. I'm just talking about in general. I went to a business the other day that I visit frequently because I have a lot of animals and they're all old. So I went over to the vets, and it was when we first opened up, and there was a lot of signage out about what we needed to do in terms of wearing masks and vaccinated, not vaccinated. Wear a mask if you're vaccinated. Only one person in the vet's office because it's a tiny little room. And I could tell from the quality of the signage that they were getting a hard time, because it said on this sign, and I thought this was so sweet and so profound, it said, look, the whole world is understaffed. Be kind to the people who have shown up. Right? Hugh and I also had a couple of close encounters with the DMV this year. We both went through a phase where we didn't have a driver's license through no fault of our own. Mine was a computer glitch. His was something like a computer glitch. It's not like we did anything reckless or anything, but we had to go to the DMV quite a bit and refrain from prayerfully blaming the DMV. But even at the DMV people, the place that people make fun of, you know, where it's really like there's a lot of red tape and a lot of pushback, there was a big sign up in the DMV that said, be kind. I know. And it made me think that maybe the DMV is having a hard time And we need the DMV. We need the DMV. They're our friends, right? And I myself, you know, have noticed a touch of crankiness from here and there. You know, I remember when I was talking with my vet about her signage and saying, you know, it looks like you're having a hard time here. What's going on? And we were talking about how people are getting upset and they're taking a lot of their angst out on others. And I said, you know what, if you need a chaplain, call me. And then I said, but, you know, actually some days I'm not so much of a chaplain, I'm more of a slaplin. Stop their complaining. The problem with blame is that it doesn't solve anything. It keeps us stuck. It keeps us stuck. And like I said, blame is asking for more blame. And blame also prevents us from taking responsibility for the way that we're reacting. People will be people. People will be people. That's one of the reasons I like having animals on stage. I actually like having animals on stage with me because it reminds me of our animal nature. You know, did the goat do anything wrong when he made a little accident here or there or whatever? They're just being people. People are having little accidents, metaphorical accidents all over the place. People are just being people. And we have absolutely, I will say, no to very little control over what they do. But where we have, of course, our source of power is how we respond to what people do. And that's the alternative to prayerfully blaming others. We can move into a place where we really are single in our focus, that we are going to do the work of love and kindness and grace in this situation, no matter what. And I really mean it. I really mean it. I don't always do it, but I really mean it. And I want that for all of us. Why? Because it affects the whole world. Our willingness to be kind in the face of adversity, in the face of challenge, in the face of irrational behavior of others, in the face of people that we don't agree with, in the face of people that we think are just behaving in a ridiculous manner, our willingness to be kind affects the whole world. I'm going to back that up with a little object lesson in a minute, but first a few little points of theology for you. Ernest Holmes talked about how love is within us. It's in all of us, and it can't be destroyed. It can't be ignored. So can that person who's yelling at me destroy the love that is within me? No. No. It can be ignored, he said. Sorry. If the person is yelling at me, it can feel like he's destroying the love in me, but I'm really just ignoring it. To the extent that we abandon love, we will feel that it has abandoned us. So if we're reacting to somebody who's being unkind to us, it may feel like love has abandoned us, but really, isn't it us that's abandoning love? Isn't it us that could shift this by cultivating a loving consciousness in the face of this adversity? And he wrote, denying love is our only problem. Really, our only problem. Those are some bold words. Anything that we look at, denying love is our only problem? Really? I'm going to meditate on that. In terms of everything that I'm deciding is a problem, I'm going to say, well, maybe this is about the denial of love. You want to know what the only answer is? Embracing love. Go figure. Embracing love is the only answer. Love heals, forgives, and makes whole. You know, and I've been saying for several months now that we're a center of mystical non-duality, and this is at the heart of the center of mystical non-duality, that there's only one of us, and that my love, my willingness to embrace love, my willingness to step back from denying love, and to know that whatever is happening within me is happening so that I can embrace love. That blesses everyone. I think I've shared this, I can't remember with who. I just do so many classes and so many teachings here and when I work with service space and whatnot, but I shared the idea that I'm interviewing a boxer, a pugilist in about a month, I guess, and a fighter. She's a girl. She's a petite woman. And she said that she would get into the ring and have to fight with this woman who was either bigger than her or stronger than her or the same size. Either way, it didn't matter. No matter who she was fighting in the ring, she realized that she was only and always fighting herself. And in this ring that we have here called the planet Earth, and this what is sometimes a boxing ring, what is sometimes a wrestling match, what if everything that seems against us, what if that is us only wrestling with ourselves? I would say primarily wrestling with our fear. Fear certainly has many manifestations. Blame is one of them when we prayerfully blame others. Criticism is one of them when we prayerfully criticize others. I'm going to stop saying prayerfully. Judgment is another one when we judge others. Putting controlling constraints on people that these people are allowed, but these people aren't. These people aren't. These people are enough. These people aren't. These people are good. These people are bad. All of those are constraints that we put upon ourselves when in fact we could embrace love. Now, you know, what always comes up with this too, what always comes up in these conversations is like, what if people are really being bad? What if people are going to hurt me? What if people are going to hit me? What if people are going to treat me terribly? What if people are doing injustice? And absolutely, yes, love is not just being a doormat. It never is. But love is coming from that place of recognition that everybody is love and drawing the love out of them through our loving actions. Love is not meeting rage with rage. Love is not meeting anger with anger. Love is not meeting criticism with criticism. Love is meeting all of those things and so much more with deep and powerful love. Sometimes it's easier said than done. But one thing that helps me is to, again, recognize that my capacity to love, even when it's difficult to love, blesses the entire world. Now, I've been talking about this for months now, but I keep saying it because it's probably just me. Probably all y'all know this, right? Just say, yeah, we know this. You're the only one, Bonnie, right? This idea of love your neighbor as you love yourself, right? Cynthia Bourgeau and other mystics talk about it's not love your neighbor as much as you love yourself. It's as you love yourself, you are automatically loving your neighbor. And as you are loving your neighbor, you are automatically loving yourself. Why? Because there's only one of us here. There's only one of us here. This is how it works. I have props, and I'm very excited about having props. Bear with me. Okay, I have here a glass of clear water. Can you all see it? Okay, this is a glass of clear water, a glass of clear water. And think of this as consciousness or the cosmos, right? I have here a syringe, and it's not blood, it's cranberry juice, okay? This is my rabbit's syringe. My rabbit is as big as that rabbit that was on stage, just about. It's for feeding, in case they get sick. It has cranberry juice in it. Remember that this is not blood. This represents consciousness. Just in case you're wondering, too, I have my backup cranberry juice in case something happens to this. Okay. So the reason I'm doing this is that I was listening to a shaman on YouTube one night when I couldn't sleep, when I had gotten tired of researching where do smells go and is the food chain Piggly Wiggly still available in the South? See me after church if you want answers to those questions. It's actually quite fascinating. But I started listening to a shaman, and she said that every time we hate, we put droplets of hate into the universe that go all over the place, that go everywhere, that become omnipresent. Every time we express rage, it's omnipresent, it's everywhere. And then I thought, it's like if the consciousness is like, if universal consciousness is like clear water, what if we were to switch that around with love? And so what if we were to, let's say this is love or kindness, and we drop the love and kindness, I need bigger hands, into the clear water. Into the consciousness. And you see what happens? It goes everywhere. It's not just, you know, I decide to love this little tiny pocket of the water over here, right? No, it goes everywhere. And the thing is also is that once it's here in the water, it's inseparable. It's in the water. It's in the consciousness. And so, let me just prove it's not blood. Trader Joe's unsweetened cranberry juice. Very sour, but I like it. So if you can hold that image in your mind and have that choice point, have that moment of choice where you're saying, okay, this person's getting mad at me, this person's getting angry with me, this person here is being unkind, and I saw it when I was waiting. I have some animals that are sick right now, so I've been at the vets a lot, and I've been seeing people getting agitated, and I want to go and I want to slap them because they're being mean to people that I like and that I care about. But what if there is some way that we can just transform that into kindness and then see that cranberry juice going into the clear water of consciousness and spreading everywhere in the world? You know? That's how we apply it to ourselves, and it's going to be different for everybody here. That's what I think Jesus meant when he said, these things ye shall do and more. He meant, I'm giving you fantastic principles about oneness and fantastic principles about manifesting the presence of heaven on earth and fantastic principles about grace and kindness and love and how our eye can be single and our whole being will be filled with light. But you don't have to do it the way I'm doing it. You take it to your life and you make it personal in whoever is working your nerves or whoever is getting in your way or whoever is cursing you or whoever is acting like an enemy. Enact these principles with them and watch the whole world change. So we practice on ourselves. But the other thing I think we can do to help us grow this consciousness, not only in our minds, in our hearts, in our bodies, is to do what my dear friend, I never met her personally, but I consider her a friend, Mary Oliver says to do, to pay attention, be astonished, and tell about it. Pay attention to how people are actually doing this kind of work in the world in small and large ways. The size matters nothing to spirit. Pay attention. Be astonished. Let it fill your heart, fill your consciousness, fill your mind, fill your body, and then tell about it. Tell about it by either doing the same type of actions yourselves or talking about it with others, sharing the truth that there is a lot of good in the world despite what certain outlets would have us believe. I often tell the staff here at the church, you know, if the Vikings had had Twitter, same, it would have been the same, right? I don't know about Vikings, I don't know any personally. The Vikings I see on television, and again, this might be stereotyping, but they seem like a pretty randy, aggressive group. Let's just put it that way. But we have Twitter now, and you know, there's not that, I just actually listened to something about it, I don't mean to digress here, there's not actually that many people on Twitter that are complaining on Twitter. When you look at the whole world, the proportions are much smaller to the people that are complaining versus the people that are not complaining. And yet, the complainers get our attention. And that's just the way our minds work. It's part of our survival brain. But back to what I was saying, pay attention, be astonished, and tell about it. So I'm going to tell you about something that I paid attention to that astonished me, and then I'm going to tell you about it. And that is about my new friend, someone that I met 3 years ago when I was in India, but I had the privilege and pleasure of interviewing her on a global call a few weeks ago, and her name is Sister Lucy, and she's a Catholic nun who is Indian, who lives in India, and she started just witnessing. She was raised in a not an affluent family, but a family that was stable and had enough food and enough shelter. And the first time she went to the slums, she could not believe that people lived like that. And it awakened something in her heart, so she said, I have to do something. And so she tried to get in with Mother Teresa's group, but she wasn't able to. Her parents wouldn't let her because at that time, she's an older woman, at that time they thought that leprosy was contagious, so they did not want her to be exposed to that illness. But she kept on trying. She kept on trying, and amidst many obstacles, she joined a group of other nuns, the Sisters of the Holy Cross. And gradually, circumstances happened so that she went on her own. And ultimately, she created 58 homes in India where they will take anybody. They will take the people in that nobody wants, people that are mentally ill, people that are struggling with mental illness, children that are struggling in various ways, just people that have no hope, and she will take them in. And the thing is that when she started, she said she didn't have one rupee. She didn't have any money, but she just kept taking faith, kept putting drops of love and kindness and faith into the clear water of consciousness, and gradually things happened. And another beautiful thing about Sister Lucy is that she is a Catholic nun, but she is raising her children in these homes to be interfaith, so that when this angry group of drunken men came to shut her down and say, you know, we don't want you converting our people to your religion, she wasn't even in the room, but the men came in where the children were studying, and they said, how many of you are Catholics? And all of the children raised their hands. And then they said, how many of you are Muslim? And all of the children said, raise their hands. How many of you are Hindu? All of the children raised their hands. And they went through a whole wheel of religion, and the children were like, yeah, we're that too. We're everything. Right? How about that? Amen and hallelujah, right? Yeah. She won't take any bribes for her work. There was a story that she told us she didn't have any electricity in one of her homes for months because the officials wanted a bribe from her in order to turn on the electricity. So finally, when they came to her to demand the bribe from her, she said her theory is to just smile and let go. So she smiled and she let go, and she brought the officials into the place where the children were studying. And she said, okay, if I were to give you that money for the bribe, three of these children would have to be cast out. So you decide which three children. And the men's jaws dropped, and they were dumbfounded, and they were like, it's much easier just to give you the electricity, girl. And so they did. One more Sister Lucy story, and that is when COVID happened. COVID was in this country, it's bad. In other countries, because I have sort of a global connection going on with some of the groups that I work with. In other countries, it's appalling, okay? So in India, there was at the beginning, there was a big surge, and then there was a bit of a lapse, and then there was another huge surge. And I believe this was in the beginning of the first surge. And also in India, when COVID hit, the food chain shut down, and there were people that were starving, and there wasn't enough for people to eat. And so Sister Lucy decided that she was going to feed these people. And she said, I don't remember the exact numbers, but I'm going to guess here. But she said something like, I'm going to at least try and feed 300 people. And she was getting just like a grain of rice at a time, just getting enough to feed 300 people. And this came out of me asking her, do you ever feel despair in your work? Because that's how we work sometimes. It's like we are trying to do good in the world. We're trying to drop our drops of kindness into the clear water of the cosmos. And sometimes it just feels like it's so futile, doesn't it? It feels like nothing is making a difference when the news, the media, the social media, the voices of the human race consciousness is so loud. It feels like nothing is making a difference. And Sister Lucy said, yes, I was in despair because there were so many people that needed food and they couldn't be fed, and they were hungry, and I didn't know what to do. So I went to my people, and they said, no, you can do this, you can do this, and they just gave me faith. And so she started writing letters. She's only has a seventh grade education. She said, I can read and I can write, not well, that's about it. So she started writing letters. And in a little while, she got enough food to feed thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And I said to her on the call, this is a loaves and fishes story, isn't it? You know what I'm talking about? Where Jesus fed, what was it, 10,000, 5,000? I can't remember the number. I'm not good with numbers today. I'm all in the spirit. Fed a ton of people, a whole, whatever, load of people, a whole bunch of people with a small number of fishes and loaves. And I said that to Lucy. This is a fishes and loaves story. And what if everything is a fishes and loaves story? if we just have the faith to keep putting that drop of clear, loving consciousness into the waters of the cosmos and see what happens. Because it wasn't like Sister Lucy did an I Dream of Jeannie thing and pulled it out of, you know, rained down from heaven. She just asked. She just trusted people enough to ask and write letters. What if that's what the world is seeking? The world is seeking us to step up and put those drops of cranberry juice, aka love and kindness, into the consciousness that is waiting for it, that is receptive, that is calling us forth to do that. One more Sister Lucy story. I can't control myself. I got to tell one more. And that is that she always admired Pope Francis, and she wanted to get blessed by him. And through a series of strange coincidences, which seems to happen to her a lot, right? And have you noticed that when you're really in touch with love, a lot of strange coincidences happen, right? She was able to travel to the Vatican and see Pope Francis. And she went up to him and she asked for his blessing. And he said, I don't know if I can bless you. And she said, no, no, please bless me. And he's like, I'm not sure if I can. And she's like, please, I need your blessing. And he said, the reason I'm not sure if I can bless you is in the light of what you're doing. I'm not sure if I'm worthy to bless you. I wish you'd bless me. And so they blessed each other. And you see how that is? You see how that is? Do you get that? This interfaith nun who's not a strict Catholic, she's raising people in the Muslim, the Hindu, the whatever, Sufi tradition, that whatever, Islam, all of these things. She is, the Pope is asking her to bless him. We have no idea what miracles love can bring to us. And if it seems like it's too much, if it seems like, how can someone like me do something like that? Just remember this glass of cranberry juice. Think about dropping those drops of loving kindness into the cosmos, into the consciousness. Think about how it goes everywhere and that it becomes inseparable. And think about these things ye shall do and more because you can. Mazel tov. Thank you. Thank you. Just need to know right now if I messed up. Was Mazel Tov the right one, or is it L'chaim? See, that's how I am. I know. This is why I ask our Jewish friends to help me with these things. L'chaim. Take two. These things ye shall do and more. L'chaim. Thank you. Mazel Tov. Let us pray. All right. So we turn within.